Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Adam Ragusea, in for Anthony Brooks. On today's show, Whitey is in court, so is Roger Clemens, and the great Bela Fleck, the man who makes the banjo cool, is here to play for us live. That's later in the hour.
But first, we'll start with today's talker and a couple of bits of tape.
We know what's happened here. We know what's possible when we invest in what works.
And we ought to know that either we invest today or we will surely pay excessively tomorrow.
So obviously that's President Obama followed by Governor Deval Patrick.
Speaking at two different events in the past couple of years.
And your point with that tape, Meghna?
Well, Adam, the point is that word, invest. It's a rallying cry that we've often heard.
Right. Improve the future. The economy, jobs, quality of life, by putting money into the present. Education, healthcare, social services.
Exactly. And it actually makes a great deal of sense. But when politicians say invest, the presumption has always been that they're talking about the government investing taxpayer dollars into such social service programs. But Massachusetts is on the cusp of becoming one of the first states in the country to try something different. The state is considering raising money for some social services and some social service programs by offering private investors a chance to earn profits on the programs that they fund.
That is, if and only if the programs actually work. That's the idea known as social financing, or pay for success.
It got its start in the UK, where it's won a lot of supporters, people who love the idea of marrying market efficiencies and innovation to social programs.
And on the other hand, though, putting the words profit and social services in the same sentence can make some people feel a little nervous.
So that's why it's today's talker. Social investment in Massachusetts, the merits and drawbacks of bringing a private sector, profit-based approach to social sector challenges. So we'll start today with Tracy Palangian. She is CEO of Social Finance. It's one of the Boston-based nonprofit companies really leading the way on social investing. It describes itself as an organization, quote, dedicated to mobilizing capital to drive social change. Tracy Palangian, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thanks, Meghna.
Also with us today is Jay Gonzalez. He is Secretary for Administration and Finance for the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. Secretary Gonzalez, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Thank you, Meghna, and hi, Tracy.
Hi, Jay.
So, Tracy Palangian, let me start with you. Adam and I kind of laid out the concept of what social financing is, but help us understand exactly what it means in reality. This idea got its start in the UK with a particular program designed to help reduce recidivism?
Absolutely, Meghna. I would caveat that the instrument is flexible and it could run to address a range of social issue areas. But let's start with recidivism among prisoners. To step back, a social impact bond is a unique three-way partnership, if you will. It's a partnership among three parties: the public sector, the private investors, and the nonprofit sector. It's a financial instrument in which investors front working capital to nonprofit organizations to implement social programs largely aimed at prevention, but targeted at achieving a set of specified social outcomes. And if a third-party evaluator deems that these predefined metrics have been achieved, the government then repays the investors their principal plus a rate of return. And as Adam said, if the programs don't work, the investors stand to lose their capital.
Okay, so practically speaking, in real terms in the UK, what does this mean? So there's a program that's been launched that's designed to keep, I believe, short-term prisoners from reoffending?
Exactly. So a little bit of context. Recidivism is around 60% among short-term prisoners in the UK, very similar statistic in the U.S. In the U.S., as a country, we spend close to $60 billion in the Department of Corrections. There are around 3 million people behind bars at any given time, and if you count parole and probation, the number creeps up to 10 million. In the Commonwealth, we spend close to $1 billion in corrections. And fine, you know, we have to spend this money. This is important for public safety. But one of the reasons why that number is so high is because we have a very high degree of recidivism.
Okay.
It's what people call the revolving door concept. Now, why do we have a high recidivism rate? The average guy walks out of prison. He has little money. He has no family to connect with. He has no job skills. Mostly, you know, have a substance abuse issues.
Sure. These are the issues that people are familiar with.
So what we were able to do in the UK, and it's a pilot program, it's small, we're just learning how it's working, is that we raise private investment capital to fund wraparound reentry programs targeted at the root causes of recidivism. So we raise the private investors' capital. We give this money to nonprofit providers who have a great track record of delivering reentry services mm-hmm. in job training, housing, rehab, mental health, et cetera, the wraparound suite of services. And if the treatment group, these are the people that we treat, and we treat every single guy that walks out of a particular prison, beats a control group by a predefined benchmark set by the government,
At least the Guardian reports it's a 10% reduction in reoffending rates for the first 1,000 prisoners in the program. That's one of the benchmarks. I mean, I'm trying to push this forward a little bit because understanding the details are important alongside the big picture. So basically, one of the benchmarks is that you're aiming for a 10% reduction rate in recidivism amongst this first group of prisoners in this one program in the UK. And if that benchmark, that 10% reduction is achieved, then those private investors who gave the seed money for the program, A, get their money back, and B, they get some form of profit. Now, how is the profit paid out?
The reason why there is a financial engine to generate profits, quote-unquote profits, to the investor is because there are net savings to government.
Because people aren't going in and out of jail all the time.
People aren't going in and out of jail, so you save money in Department of Public Safety, you save money in the judiciary system, you save money in the police department, all the costs associated with this revolving door. And it's only that when things work and government is in the position to generate savings, would they share a portion of that savings to the investors.
Okay. So just to recap, you have a program for a particular social problem. In this case, we're talking about the revolving door of jail in one particular area in the United Kingdom. And the thinking is that private funds along with these established nonprofits can work together in a way that does better than what government does so far. And then if they do a good job and reduce the recidivism rate, then they get some sort of profit from that. But if they don't do a good job, then there's not a single taxpayer dollar that goes to pay for this money. So the risk is on the investors.
Exactly. They lose their capital.
Okay. So that's the general idea behind social investment bonds.
Social impact bonds.
Okay, and it's coming here maybe to Massachusetts. So let me turn to Secretary Jay Gonzalez, Secretary of Administration and Finance for the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. Secretary Gonzalez, what advantage do you see plainly for introducing this way of thinking in the Commonwealth?
Well, it presents another tool for us to potentially do things cheaper and better. And that's what this is all about for us. I mean, the context for state government right now and governments all across the country is that we have a new fiscal reality. We just went through an unprecedented fiscal crisis over the last 3 years as a result of the recession. Our tax revenues are way down from where they used to be, and we are having to reinvent ourselves and find ways to deliver government services that people depend on cheaper and more effectively than we did before.
Mm.
In the beginning of the fiscal crisis, people said the crisis presented an opportunity for change in government. We're way past that. We're now at the point where our fiscal situation demands that we change the way we do business, and taxpayers are demanding that we change the way we do business. So we have, under Governor Patrick, instituted a lot of changes to the way we do business in state government in Massachusetts, lots of reforms that have been implemented over the last few years. And we see this social innovation financing concept as a potential additional tool for us to find innovative new ways to deliver critical social services and programs and incent providers to be innovative about finding new ways to deliver those services in ways that we're going to get better outcomes, and that's going to be cheaper for the state. And that's what this is all about for us.
So we should note that while Massachusetts is a leader here in the United States, this program or the concept has gotten, obviously, national attention. President Obama himself has put a proposal in the FY 2012 budget for $100 million to fund these social impact bonds. So the effort and attention goes all the way to Washington, D.C. Secretary Gonzalez, we raised this question in the introduction to the show. Some people get very nervous when the whole idea of, even if it's just one part of a larger suite of new initiatives, when the idea of a profit motive gets rolled into anything that government does or social services, it makes some people nervous. So why introduce that form of private sector thinking or energy into something that government should be able to do better on its own?
Well, in some cases, we might be able to do it better on our own, and we may not need private financing in order to get to that new and better way of delivering services. I think the way we're looking at it from state government perspective is we are going to pay for services, and we're paying for outcomes, which is one of the things I like about the way this social innovation financing concept is structured, is we would be entering into a contract not with the investors, but with the providers of the service, whether it's social services to those, to youth offenders who were trying to keep out of jail, or to homeless people who were trying to get into permanent housing. We would be contracting with those providers who are offering to provide those services in different ways and get better outcomes and save us money. Mm-hmm. And we would be saying to them, if you deliver on your promise and you demonstrate through the outcomes and measures that we agree to up front, that you are accomplishing the objectives that we're asking you to accomplish, then we will pay you the amount we agree to pay you. And I will not, and I know Governor Patrick would not, be agreeing to pay some amount that is going to do anything other than save us money versus what we're paying today. And if we can accomplish that and get better outcomes, and that allows the provider to repay some private investor that they may need to depend on in order to pay the upfront costs of delivering those services, then that's a good deal for taxpayers, and that's a deal we're going to take.
Well, Secretary Gonzalez, hold that thought right there, because I want to throw some questions to our listeners. Very interesting concept, social innovation financing. Do you think it would work for complex social problems like recidivism, education, homelessness? You know, do you think, does adopting a private sector approach make real sense here? And is it the way to raise much needed money, make programs more efficient, as we heard, and get the most bang for taxpayer buck? Or do you suspect the motives whenever profit motive becomes part of the equation? And especially if you're in the social sector, or if you're a listener in the nonprofit sector, or an investor, I'm interested in knowing what your takes are on the merits and drawbacks of these social impact bonds. Call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm going to bring one more voice into this conversation. He is Joe Kreisberg. He is president of the Massachusetts Association of Community Development Corporations. Joe Kreisberg, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
And Tracy Polangian, I'm going to want to hear a little bit more from you, because this idea raises a lot of questions about the not only the merits but the drawbacks. And it seems to me that they kind of fall into two big categories. One are the practical concerns, and then there's a philosophical concern. So amongst the practical concerns, you know, I wonder, as we heard Secretary Gonzalez said, there are metrics that must be met. There are measurable outcomes that have to be met. In the UK case, it's a 10%, that's one of the measurements, 10% reduction in recidivism. Measuring outcomes has always been a challenge in the social sector. So do you hear anything that makes you think that challenge is being overcome now?
Well, I think it's appropriate for state government, obviously, to insist on outcomes from the providers and nonprofits and anyone that it does business with. And certainly our organization believes strongly in that. We feel like our members, which are nonprofits across the state, do deliver outcomes, $1 billion of economic investment in the 4 years of the Patrick administration. So I think there are lots of mechanisms for doing that, and we're getting better and better at it with new technology and new data systems. I think the concern in terms of attaching financial incentives in the way that is sometimes being described is that you become so focused on a single metric that you lose sight of the complexity of the issues you're trying to solve, and that you have to pick metrics that are easy to count, even if they're not the most important outcomes. So that's one of the challenges, I think, that emerge when you try to actually implement these kinds of programs. But I think the core philosophical idea of focusing on performance, on prevention, on comprehensive solutions, on private sector leverage, I think everybody's on board with that.
Okay, so let's tease this part a little bit more. Tracy Palangian, Joe Kreisberg just said, there's a potential for a selection bias, essentially. Like, you know, if you have to decide what the measurement is that you're going to measure effectiveness, I mean, who's to say that 10% reduction in recidivism is exactly what the goal you want to meet? And, I mean, we've seen this problem with charter schools, for example. That one strong criticism of them is that the charter schools choose kids who are going to do well. So what's to stop a nonprofit that wants to meet this metric to get that profitable payout from choosing the people who are most likely to help them meet the measurement?
First of all, there's a self-sustaining set of checks and balances in place. The government clearly wants to set a hurdle high enough so that they would only pay if their net savings achieved. The investors, on the other hand, want to set a hurdle low enough so that no matter what, they will get their money back. So clearly the setting of the metrics is going to be critical to making sure that everyone's incentives are aligned. The skimming problem is one that we are extremely cognizant of. So in the UK, for example, we've chosen to treat the system the whole system population in one particular prison. So unless, you know, you could have the allegation that this particular prison has, quote unquote, easier prisoners, easier to, more likely to reform, and that we firmly believe that this particular prison is a representative sample of prisoners out there in the real world, the allegations around skimming is actually can be put to rest. What I think is really important in this philosophical debate around profiting from social outcomes, let's take a look at who these investors are. These investors are all foundations or charitable trusts of individuals or family offices. These are actually not profit-motivated investors. These are socially motivated investors. In fact, if you're a profit maximizing investor, this is a pretty bad deal for you to be investing in. You have equity-like downside, you could lose all your money, and your upside is actually capped, like a bond-like return. So strictly from a financial risk-return perspective is actually not a great deal.
But then why, I mean, so then why introduce the profit motive at all if you're dealing with large institutions that don't, that are altruistic to begin with? It shouldn't even be part of their thinking.
Right. So right now, if you're a nonprofit, you have two sources of capital to deliver social change. One is through private philanthropy, through the grant allocation of major foundations, mm-hmm. and the other is to go to state agencies and city agencies and have a government contract. And we know that these two sources of funding for nonprofits are insufficient to deal with the massive, intractable social challenges ahead of us. And what we're trying to say is the social impact bond brings in a new source of capital that is not grant capital, that is not state contract capital. This is the investment capital. So it's the balance sheet of the foundation that we're leveraging, not the 5% grant allocation.
So that makes it potentially more attractive to them. Joe Kreisberg, I want to bring you back in here because there's an issue. You wrote about this in Nonprofit Quarterly, and there's a great issue that you raised about these problems are very complex in nature. There's no one single reason why people go in and out of jail. There's no one single reason why kids don't stay in school. And so to reduce it down to, you know, to one measurement, at least in this phase of the idea, it seems quite reductive. And that's a concern that you had, that it doesn't really map to the real world. And how can you determine what's causing the problems to begin with?
Yeah, one of the issues is that social problems are complex, and what causes the positive outcome is hard to discern. Usually there are multiple causes. Now, the positive prospect here is that you could have a comprehensive solution, as Tracy talked about in the prisoner case, where you're doing wraparound services. That's the opportunity. But you still, somebody has to start to sort out the money, who gets paid, how much, who had 80% of the impact, who had 60% of the impact. All those challenges that we face today still exist. And moreover, we're talking about private capital, but in fact, all of this is taxpayer money. We're running it through a private entity, but every dollar that's flowing here starts with the taxpayer. And people shouldn't think that there's a free lunch, that there's private capital here that's being added to the system. It's still taxpayer dollars.
Secretary Gonzalez, I want to come back to you in a second, but we've got a lot of callers who want to join us. So
can I just make one point in response to what Joe
said? Sure.
Because I think Joe is absolutely right about the challenge of figuring out the right metrics. I don't know that it's necessarily one metric. And what we need to do through this process, to the extent we're going to engage in this type of an arrangement, is make sure that we've got the right metrics set up from the beginning to make sure we're getting the comprehensive result that we're looking for. So I think Joe's absolutely right to put his finger on the fact that that's the challenge. That doesn't mean we shouldn't do it. And we should, in government, be insisting not just in situations where we're entering into these types of innovative social financing arrangements, but we're moving under Governor Patrick and with the support of the legislature, and there's a provision in our budget to help us do this, toward changing the way we do business generally in state government to focus more on what is it that we should be trying to accomplish, what are the outcomes we should be looking for in all these different areas, and how do we ensure, what are our strategies, what are the ways in which we put resources in place to make sure we achieve those outcomes. And for too long, government has been about, these are programs that are in place to deal with these different problems, and they've always been in place, and so we keep doing the programs.
Mm-hmm.
We can't do that anymore. We got to ask the question about what is it we're trying to accomplish, and yes, that's hard, but it makes us focus on what the answer to that is and how we get those results, and that's what we need to be doing.
Well, let's turn to some listeners on the back of your comment. First of all, we have a comment on Facebook. Jose Michael Rodriguez writes, as members of our general society, it is as important for business leaders to invest in the community as it is for the community to invest in itself. Let's turn to Cambridge, where David is calling. You're on the air, David.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'm a social worker by training and have worked in homeless shelters, and I like this idea. I think we should definitely try it. What comes up for me is a concern about in the micro relationship between the service provider and, say, a person in jail or, you know, whoever you're working with, there's so much patience is needed in that relationship that's part of the helping and the healing that goes on. When the profit motive is introduced, even in the way you're talking about, my concern is that pressure then gets put on the service provider to make certain things happen with the client. And just how are you thinking about that? Have you seen that be dealt with? And is there regulations around what providers can be doing with their clients to prevent overly pressuring clients for certain results?
David, thank you so much for your call, and I want to get an answer to that, but I want to be able to squeeze in a couple more callers before we run out of too much time, so keep your thought in mind. We'll come back to your thought, David. Matthew is calling from Beverly. You're on the air, Matthew.
Hi, yes. I just wanted to say that this whole idea of social financing sounds like things will get done better and quicker than they have been so far, because this recidivism is one of the major problems that we're facing as a society. And if this can make it happen, can make it shrink faster, well, then I say go ahead and do it.
Mm. Matthew, thank you for your call. Let's turn to Nashua, New Hampshire, where Mike is calling. You're on the air, Mike.
Hey, how you doing? I think the idea sounds very intriguing. I work in the system. Two things I was wondering is if there will be how much pressure there will be on the providers to, like, disregard some dirty urine tests because they'll have to throw people out of the program and they won't hit their target. And I don't know if that's good for public safety. And I was wondering if they would have the stomach for a Willie Horton-type event where someone passes their program and goes out or is almost at the end of their program and goes out and shoots a police officer or does some horrific crime that grabs the headline news. And that seems to be something that kills a lot of these good ideas.
Mike, thank you so much for your call. We've just got a few minutes left, Tracy Palangian, but you've heard there already. You've got people intrigued, but they're concerned about the pressures, and especially market pressures, that might end up becoming part of this system.
So David's question is remarkable. First of all, these investors are patient investors. The UK bond is an 8-year instrument. We know that it takes time for us to address the root causes of problems. So, for example, you know, to get a prisoner back on his or her feet, it's going to take more than, you know, 3 or 4 or 5 months. And we're patient, and the investors are patient. What we're trying to do is invest our dollars in prevention programs, which typically the government is not in a position of funding. Why? The short short-term nature of the political cycle makes it hard for an administration to invest in a program that might take 2 or 3 or 4 years to realize its results. Second, the government accounting silos also makes it very difficult to invest in prevention programs. So David works in the homeless business. Okay, so housing and homeless services department might invest in supportive housing services to prevent chronic homelessness, but the savings are actually in Medicaid when the homeless person is not ping-ponging through the emergency rooms services and shelters and psychiatric hospitals. And what we're trying to do is bridge that gap between prevention and cure and have the private money come in to take on that risk, and government would only pay if things work.
Joe Kreisberg, we've just got about 15 seconds left, so your final thought.
Well, just knowing what works and who should get credit, the nonprofit can perform very well, but if the economy tanks, the performance numbers are going to be down and people are going to lose a lot of money. And the same on the upside, you could have windfalls. So that's where it gets complicated. I think if we can try to save money, we should. But we have to make sure that we're achieving the social outcomes we want first and foremost.
Joe Kreisberg, president of the Massachusetts Association of Community Development Corporations, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
And Tracy Polangian, CEO of Social Finance, thank you for coming into the studio as well. Secretary Jay Gonzalez, Secretary for Administration and Finance for the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, always great to have you on the show, Secretary. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Magna.
And listeners, you had some great comments on the phone, so I couldn't get to all of you, so put them on our website, radioboston.org. And stay with us, because after the break, James Whitey Bulger is in federal court today, and so is Roger Clemens. Not together, though. Sports and a South Boston gangster in just a moment. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty with Adam Ragusea today. This is Radio Boston.